The idea of Legionem is really simple. It's that if you have an entertainment company that is owned by a legion of fans, you have inherent competitive advantages almost throughout the value chain as far as how you can finance films, how you can greenlight films, how you can attach the right talent to your films. And obviously, when it comes to distribution, how you can galvanize fans to come see your films.
This is the Box Office Podcast. I'm Daniel Luria, the editorial director of Box Office Pro, the pulse of theatrical exhibition. Once again this week with my colleague and co-host, Rebecca Pauly, deputy editor of Box Office Pro. And in this week's episode, we are going to be looking at some of the latest strategic initiatives around programming that AMC Theaters, the largest exhibition circuit in North America and around the world, is taking on to combat the, let's say, slower trickle of studio titles coming to our screens this year. We're also going to be looking at the opening weekend forecast for Ghostbusters Frozen Kingdom coming out from Sony this weekend. And in our feature segment, we've got a special guest, Jeff Annison, the co-founder of Legion M Entertainment, a production company that is putting out fan-driven films to theaters. The next film they've got up on their slate is You Can Call Me Bill, the documentary on William, or Bill Shatner, coming out this weekend as well. My interview with Jeff Annison closing out this episode here on the Box Office Podcast. But first, Rebecca, I'm going to ask you what I ask you every week. I can't go to the movies because I have to take care of an infant at home. You can. I'm living vicariously through your cinema visits. What did you see? Where did you go?
I saw two movies since we last recorded. I finally caught up with Dune at the AMC on 34th Street.
What format? Love it. You got to start with the format.
Here in the city, we pretty much have one IMAX that is legit huge, big IMAX, and that just we. Was the one on around Lincoln Center, and we could just tickets to that are ungettable. So we went for the mini IMAX. Didn't love it so much, but I'm glad it's making a ton of money. And you know, we'll see. But I also went down to Film Forum, caught a movie called Jigoku that's part of their Japanese horror series. It's basically a movie about what happens in hell.
So that's been on my to watch list on the Criterion Channel for years, but I'm always a little bit too sleepy or a little bit too scared to watch it. Is it a theatrical experience, or can a guy get away watching it at home?
I would say it is more vibes than plot driven, but you like watching. You like watching vibes. It's liminal spaces all day long.
I like watching liminal spaces all day long. Big into surrealism. This sounds it's up my alley, Rebecca.
The guy who plays the devil is when you watch it, it's really good. He's just
I didn't know that the devil was in the film. That's always good when you look at the credits, closing credits says devil played by. Always enjoy movies that they have to cast the devil. I'm completely into it. It's their Japanese horror series, right? Mm-hmm. You spoke about this on the podcast earlier. They've got this great repertory series over at Film Forum in Lower Manhattan on Japanese horror. Mm-hmm. Sounds wonderful. Sounds great. I'm sorry you didn't like Dune. It's interesting because you're a lot bigger of a sci-fi fan than I am. I usually have
I typically love those kind of sci-fi fantasy epics.
With a deep mythology behind them, plot driven. I don't like that type of movie. I'm allergic to those types of movies, but I really like these Dune movies, and it's not at all the type of movie I like. It is the type of movie you like, but you're not a big fan of how Villeneuve made these two movies. It's interesting that we have this this split.
Yeah, and it's not. I mean, I just think it's some things just don't connect with you. I tried to read Dune the book, never really made it through it. Yeah, it's a little too dour for me.
Fair enough. I totally get it. But you still went, paid, saw it. And at the end of the day, you have an opinion. That still counts. We still need popcorn. That in the industry. Hey, popcorn. It's always good.
Eric didn't want to buy popcorn. Did he eat half of my popcorn when I bought it?
Well,
that's why I got a large,
That's exactly why you take the upsell when they offer it. Great. Fantastic. Well, we've got a whole bunch of news here, not related to popcorn, but that is related to programming
AMC and repertory horror, actually.
And repertory horror, actually. Absolutely. So let's get into it, because AMC Theaters is very active right now. We had three press releases coming in from the circuit last week. with updates on how they're programming their screens with something other than major Hollywood films when that programming or that available slate isn't as, let's say, bountiful as we'd like it. Let's start with this Blumhouse Halfway to Halloween Film Festival that we're seeing across the circuit. Can you tell us about this concept?
Yeah, that's the one I'm most excited about. So we're going to start there. Obviously, Blumhouse has had just a bunch of success, theatrical and otherwise, really revitalizing the horror genre over the past decade and a half. Blumhouse and AMC are getting together to kind of host this little mini film festival throughout kind of the months of March and April, halfway to Halloween. For about 6 months, 6 months out at that point.
Halloween is a term.
People can go see these films when they screen at AMC for $8 a pop. There are going to be giveaways and some exclusive recorded messages from the directors and the talent, kind of turning it into, you know, an eventized sort of situation. We're going to see Split, The Purge, Ouija Origin of Evil, and Insidious, and The Invisible Man. Ouija or Origin of Evil, I might do that one. That's actually screening on Easter. And that's one of those that was directed by Mike Flanagan, who at the time, you know, he's gone on to do some really big things.
If you end up directing The Shining sequel, you're walking into a quagmire. You come out relatively unscathed. That's pretty good, right?
People love Netflix series of literary horror adaptations. So this definitely feels like an opportunity. I mean, I didn't see Ouija Origin of Evil on the big screen when it came around. I was like, why would I want to see a Ouija prequel? Ouija. But, you know, I think it's a good opportunity giving people, you know, the chance to catch up on some of these films that maybe they missed the first time around, to see them in that horror environment. And yeah, it's another instance of AMC looking outside of the typical distribution pipelines for content. Of course, as they did so well to the tune of, I think, about 180 million domestically last year with the Taylor Swift Eras Tour.
Yeah, exciting results, as we've seen here. What else do you think is noteworthy from AMC's activity in this, let's call it, diversification away from their Hollywood slate?
Well, let's go from the most quote-unquote, I think, fun one, which is obviously Halloween horror movies. They're also leaning in to alternative use for auditoriums as sites for business meetings. They have announced...
Oh, so you will go from something that's really fun,
to something that's not.
The movie is like the worst thing you can do at a movie theater, which is a Zoom call, basically.
And then the third one's going to be in the middle, but we'll get to that. Yeah. throughout 8 cities, there are going to be, they're called Zoom rooms at AMC that basically is responding to the fact that workplaces are very dispersed nowadays. We have people from all over, people working from home, maybe in the same city, maybe not. So it's being pitched as a way to bring workforces together to have a kind of hybrid event and meeting experience. This was actually announced back in 2022. I don't know if you recall, but it was announced a while ago, but it has launched now. In Atlanta, Chicago, Denver, Kansas City, LA, New York, San Jose, and Seattle, Tacoma area. So, if you get free popcorn out of it, I can see worse places to have a business meeting.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, the world of Zoom calls, if you're going to do it anywhere, do it somewhere you like spending time in.
Right. Do it in the heated recliner.
That's fine. That's good. That doesn't sound bad at all. No. You have to meet me halfway here, because we went from like a really cool thing I definitely want to do at AMC to something I no offense to our friends at AMC, I don't want to do at AMC. I don't want to attend the Zoom call if I don't have to. Sometimes you don't have a choice. But let's go Goldilocks here. What's the sweet spot in the middle in terms of this innovative use of their screen space?
The sweet spot is sports, which is not particularly a sweet spot, but I think it may be for you.
I'm into it. All right, what's going on the sports side?
So on the sports side, coming up this summer, end of July, going into August, we have the 2024 Paris Olympics. Daniel, as you know, I feel like NBC Universal has aired the Olympics for what feels like my entire lifetime. I don't know if that's the case, but they have a lockdown on those rights. It's something that is taken very seriously, I think, by all involved, the rights to screen some of those Olympic events. But we did hear the news last week that NBC Universal is going to offer a block of live daytime coverage of the Paris Summer Olympics to AMC theaters nationwide. We don't know which sports, obviously. It's a while until this is going to start. It's going to kick off July 27th and run through August 11th. That's the AMC screenings, not necessarily the Olympics themselves. But yeah, I'm intrigued by this. You know, it's going to be live.
It would have to obviously coincide with the event at the Olympics themselves, which probably that schedule dictates what you can put on. It's tricky.
You can't do that with every Olympics because some of the stuff is going to be last Summer Olympics was in Tokyo. You couldn't do anything.
The time difference wouldn't work. I'm just curious in terms of what the appeal is going to be in terms of those programming blocks. I don't know. I mean, I don't usually watch too many Olympic events. I'll watch whenever Mexico is in the soccer tournament. Mm-hmm. I'll watch that. Honestly, I'm a big boxing fan. The worst sort of boxing you can watch is Olympic boxing. It's just so incredibly corrupt. So I just get frustrated. Mm-hmm. But it's a very pick and choose, very fan driven.
You never know what are going to be the big stories. Right?
What takes off exactly? I think it's tricky to get the Olympics down for linear television. I think it's really tricky to get it down for streaming. I think it's going to be a challenge to see how it works in movie theaters, but it's a risk I think worth taking because
you have to.
You have to innovate, right?
Give it a shot. See what works. Throw spaghetti at the wall. I mean, if anyone kind of has the data to make an educated guess as to how this is going to go over, definitely it's NBC. So.
And maybe that's an Olympic event now, spaghetti wall throwing. At this point, you just don't know. I'd pay to see that in AMC.
AMC, throwing a lot of spaghetti at the walls nowadays.
You think Italy would probably be a leader in that Olympic sport?
I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't want to waste the spaghetti.
Yeah, maybe they would just not go. Yeah, maybe they'd say no, we're boycotting this Olympics. Mm-hmm.
But AMC doing a lot of interesting stuff nowadays. The week before last, they announced a special deal where you can sign up for their subscription program for 99 cents. They're asterisk. You have to do a 3-month commitment.
That.
And it kind of shakes out for 3 months for the price of two, which still is not
That's
bad.
A great deal, though. If you think about in New York City, the price of one premium format ticket is actually more than the price of 1 month of the AMC A-List subscription service. Getting 1 month free is a no-brainer.
They're trying some different things operationally in terms of programming. And actually, Daniel, that sort of offbeat specialty programming is really the crux of our feature interview this week.
Absolutely. That's a good transition, Rebecca. We've got a feature interview with Jeff Anison, one of the co-founders of Legion M, which is an interesting production studio that takes on fan investors and kind of related to what Angel Studios is doing, where they poll their fan investors to see what they want to pick up as projects, what they want to tackle. They've released a couple of films as co-financiers. Right now they have their first big solo production that is going out into theaters, the documentary You Can Call Me Bill about William Shatner that's coming out this weekend. I have a great conversation on that entire concept and where theatrical is and why we need fresh ideas like this to bring in a diversity of content to screens. So Jeff Anison, the co-founder, is going to be with us shortly.
He's had such an interesting career. But before we hear more about the time that he did a movie in Esperanto, I don't know if that made it into the doc, but he did do that. A brief look ahead at box office. This past week, Kung Fu Panda continued its very solid run in its second week, 30 million estimated, beating out Dune Part 2 and new release Arthur the King. This upcoming weekend, we finally have a newer kind of bigger tentpole release coming out with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I'll definitely be curious to see how that coming out and presumably taking some of Dune's PLF footprint kind of changes the shape of things there. Daniel, what are we predicting for Ghostbusters opening weekend?
So Ghostbusters Frozen Empire coming out this weekend. Right now we have a range between $31 and $45 million for that opening weekend. We expect this movie to perform along the lines of Ghostbusters Afterlife domestically, which you might remember made nearly $130 million in North America. That's around the ceiling that we are looking at for this film. Of course, the opening weekend is going to tell us a lot about this title. I'm a little interested in this. I never saw Afterlife. I know you saw that at CinemaCon back in 2021 in COVID CinemaCon, COVID-a-con, where we all, like, it felt like it was like 13 of us in the industry went and just shared horror stories
and yet,
in Las Vegas for a week in August.
And yet Ghostbusters screened and it felt normal for...
And it felt wonderful.
2 hours
I still insist that's the best CinemaCon of all time. My best CinemaCon experience of all time was that one in 2021 in August. I think everyone that was there were people that were 100% in on making this industry work. Mm-hmm. And I have very fond memories. I have very fond memories, of course, of that screening that happened, the Afterlife screening. This sequel, as we're mentioning, should perform on par. If you remember, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire was originally scheduled to come out in the holiday corridor of 2023, was rescheduled due to the actors and writer strike. And now we are getting it in late March. So we'll see how it plays out.
And if you're interested in the franchise, do go to boxoffice.com, where we have an interview with the director and co-writer, Gil Keenan.
Well, Rebecca, thank you again for joining me here for the news segment. And now coming up, after the break, we've got co-founder of Legion M, Jeff Anison, talking about their new documentary, You Can Call Me Bill. And we are back here on the Box Office Podcast with Jeff Anison, the co-founder of Legion M, which is bringing out a new documentary to your theaters this weekend. William Shatner, You Can Call Me Bill, releasing here starting on March 22nd. Jeff, welcome to the Box Office Podcast. How's everything going, man? I know you're getting into the swing of things here in the exhibition business. How's everything been in your experience getting to know here our community?
Oh my God, it's amazing. It's a total roller coaster. Like, it's just this avalanche of work and details, but it's so exciting for us and so exhilarating. This is our company's been around for over 8 years now, or almost 8 years now, I should say. And we've been involved with the release of over a dozen movies, but we've worked with some of the greatest distributors in the world, like Neon and Bleecker Street and Searchlight. And this is not new to us, but we've always been the kid in the back seat of the car. And this is the first time that we have our hands on the wheel. And so it's really exciting. And it's, for us as a company that's owned by community, theater is where our community comes together. And so it's such a natural fit, but it's also kind of daunting because when you get up here, you're like, oh my gosh, there's a lot of switches and I don't know what all of them do. And so for us, we've had it's been a wild ride, but we're really excited. Couldn't be more excited to bring the film out.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the company Legion M, because I think that's a great launching point on how you guys are, where you are in the media ecosystem of today. What were the beginnings of Legion M? How did that idea come through? And what niche were you trying to fill in the entertainment business in creating it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the short answer is, for anybody that's not familiar with Legion M, we're a fan-owned entertainment company. And so we produce and develop and finance and now distribute films. So that makes us pretty much like any other company in Hollywood or thousands of other people that do the same thing. But what makes us unique is that we're the first one that was been built from the ground up to be owned by fans. And it was precipitated by some changes to securities law that made this possible. It passed in 2016. And for the first time in history, I mean, these new securities laws were literally changing laws that have been on the books since the Great Depression. Regular, ordinary people had the ability to invest in pre-IPO startups effectively. And so prior to that, the only people that were allowed to invest in pre-IPO startups were accredited investors, which is effectively the wealthiest few percent of the country. It's, you know, venture capitalists. This is how Mark Cuban, you know, made his fortune and that sort of thing. And, you know, the Securities and Exchange Commission opened it up. They democratized it. And so we saw that as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And the idea of Legionum is really simple. It's that if you have an entertainment company that is owned by a legion of fans, you have inherent competitive advantages almost throughout the value chain as far as how you can finance films, how you can greenlight films, how you can attach the right talent to your films. And obviously, when it comes to distribution, how you can galvanize fans to come see your films. And so our goal, the M with the bar over it, is the Roman numeral for 1 million. Because our long-term goal is to unite 1 million fans as shareholders of the company. And if you've got 1 million shareholders, you got 1 million people that you can bring out opening night and they can bring their friends because it's their movie and they've been following along since day one. And so that's the fundamental concept behind it. And so we launched the company, like I said, it was almost 8 years ago. We have over 50,000 investors in the company and in our films. And it's just, it's a fundamentally new way to build an entertainment business. And that's what we're trying to do.
Now, we have to distinguish this from, let's say, the wave of Kickstarter crowdfunding projects that came up around 10, 15 years ago. If you remember, Zach Braff had a high-profile Kickstarter-funded film, Wish I Was Here, 2013. Then it seemed like your second cousin, twice removed, grandpa's nephew, had a passion project documentary that was looking to raise 50 grand. It seemed like you got crowdfunding requests every 3 days if you were in the film industry. But this is very different. This is a completely different model. Whereas crowdfunding was project-oriented, here fans can be investors in the company itself. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. I'm so glad you asked this question because it's an important distinction. You know, the fundamental distinction is when you back a project on Kickstarter, you are donating to that project in exchange for whatever you're getting. A lot of times it's a pre-sale of, you know, the DVD or it's your name in the credits or coffee mug or whatever. Equity crowdfunding is what we're doing. That's what's new. That's what was this disruptive new securities laws that allow you to invest in a movie. And that's the fundamental difference. When you back a movie on Kickstarter, you're never going to see a dime of that. You're supporting a project you love. When
you might get a sticker out of it, right?
Like exactly.
You put in your $25, you get a sticker. Maybe the movie gets made or not, but you get a sticker out of it. Congratulations.
Well, you know, fundamentally what you're doing is you're being a part of something that's bigger than yourself. You're supporting that a story that you love, that you want to see the screen. That's why people do it. And that's wonderful, right? Like that's, you know, patronage. I think wonderful. But again, like, you know, that works for some people. It's hard for Steven Spielberg to come out and say like, hey, will you donate to my new project that I'm trying to do? But if Steven Spielberg said, hey, do you want to invest in this new project that I'm going to do? Like, that's fundamentally different and very interesting. And so with Legion M, we have people who have invested directly in some of our films, including the William Shatner doc that we're talking about now. We also have a Morgan Freeman, Ed Harris, Sonequa Martin-Green, Natalie Morales film that premiered at South by Southwest a couple weeks ago. And that one is also funded largely by fans. But when I say funded by fans, they put in the money that made it possible, but they also get revenue from the film. And mm-hmm. So, you know, it's an opportunity to, you know, I mean, movies are very risky. We're very upfront with this with people. Like, honestly, if you're looking for a safe investment, like, don't look in Hollywood. Like, that's not, you know. But if you want to take a swing for the fences, because some movies do make money and they can make quite a lot of money. And if you want to be a part of something that you love and support it and all that sort of stuff, but in a way where you're not just donating in exchange for a sticker, but you actually have some return on it, I think that's, you know, kind of the opportunity. And so we have people that have invested in our individual films. but we also have people who have invested in the company as a whole. And the way that I describe it, it's like, if you could go back in time, would you want to have invested in Snow White, the movie, or would you have wanted to invest in Walt Disney Studios, right? Back when they were getting off the ground. And so that's, again, it's very high risk investing. You know, you're not investing in Walt Disney Studios today. You're investing on Walt Disney Studios back when they were, you know, on the verge of going bankrupt and just trying to get off the ground doing something where everybody told them that they were ridiculous, right? The idea that they were going to do a feature-length animated film at the time was, they called it Disney's Folly because everybody said, are you kidding me? Like cartoons, that's what you play before the movies. They're short form. Nobody wants to see a full-length animated movie. And, you know, Disney made a bet and lo and behold, he was right. So,
and that's what I absolutely love about what you guys are bringing to the table here, because it's, and you're right. It's, I was being a bit glib when I said you get a sticker in return of, you know, being a patron creating a film. But the reality of, I think, where Kickstarter, you can get a little bit muddled and lost is there a distribution plan for the movie? Is there a production plan for the movie? You know,
well, you hit
your mother's friend who's making the film, who's trying to get it done. Do they really have the know-how to get it beyond the finish line? Jeff, you know how hard it is to make a movie. And you know, once you finish the movie, after that miracle happens, you still have to find a way to put it in theaters, which is a lot easier said than done. And that's what Legion M brings to the table.
Well, and that's one of the fundamental challenges with crowdfunding, Kickstarter crowdfunding, is that usually when you're crowdfunding a movie, you're giving people a copy of the DVD or the ability to watch it digitally. So you've taken your most passionate audience, the people that loved it so much that they wanted to support it, and you've already tapped that audience. You've already fulfilled them because they're going to get the DVD. So like that makes it really hard if you try and go to traditional distribution because, you know, I mean, maybe you can get it theatrically and a lot of those people, maybe they'll come out to watch it theatrically. But when it comes to home entertainment, like you've already sold all of that. And so again, it's just, I love Kickstarter as an entrepreneur and as someone who has been doing this for over 20 years. I mean, that was one of the greatest innovations, I think, of our time is just this ability for people to support things like this. But I think that equity crowdfunding, it just takes it five steps further. And it's not, I tell people all the time, because Paul, my partner, and myself, we are advocates of equity crowdfunding. And it's not just a different way to raise money. It's a fundamentally different way to build a fundamentally different type of business. And if we could achieve our long-term goal, if we could actually unite 1 million fans as shareholders of the company, we believe that could make us one of the most influential companies in Hollywood. And the fact is, if that happens, the people that will benefit are the people who invested and the people who were early investors in the company, because, you know, they were the ones that create the value. So it's just this wonderful virtuous circle, right? This self-perpetuating loop, that the more opportunities and excitement that we can create for our shareholders, the more enthusiastic they are about our movies, which makes them more likely to support them, which makes them movies more likely to succeed, which then benefits the shareholders. And so like that's what we're focused on, is that loop and just growing it as big as we possibly can.
And it's such an important time to have a player like yourselves come into the theatrical market right now, where we've seen the number of films theatrically released to theaters drop precipitously since the beginning of the pandemic. And it's a really tricky period where the production companies with direct access to distribution platforms and distribution departments, theatrical included, are making less movies to go to theaters. And there's a ton of production companies, a ton of independent films going out there that are having a hard time getting access to theatrical distribution and the entire infrastructure needed to be able to bring their films to theaters. What Legion M has been able to do in the past is find funding for some of these titles that are fan-driven, partner with different distributors, and now with this documentary coming out tomorrow, you're actually distributing your first film yourselves. Let's start with the first half of that equation. Those first projects that you brought the theaters through partnering, what was that like? What were some of those films that came out? And what were some of your early lessons in bringing these titles to cinemas across the country?
It's a great question. I mean, the easy part is the films that we've been involved with. So our very first project was Colossal with Anne Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis back in 2017.
Which, by the way, I saw in theaters at the Alamo Drafthouse in Brooklyn with my wife. We both had a great time. That's a great example of a movie that we came out thinking, man, I'd really like to see more of these weird, quirky movies. It's great that we had this experience back when, was it 2016, 2017?
2017, yeah. 2017. Yeah. No, I completely agree. I mean, I love that movie, first of all. It's probably one of my favorite Legion M projects. And yeah, I mean, Legion M, we were a baby at the time. The only reason that we got involved with that was Tim League was one of our founding investors at Legion M. And Tim League from Alamo Drafthouse, of course, and then later Neon. So Colossal was Neon's first release, and they picked it up at TIFF. And Tim said, hey, we picked up this movie and it's hard to market a movie like that, right? Yeah. Because it's just a weird concept, right? If you got a blonde and a gun, you got something like that's a fastball down the middle as far as distribution is concerned, you know, or obviously you got like, you know, a major IP and major talent attached and all that sort of stuff. Like those are the easy things because they fit into boxes that they know, okay, I know how to market this movie. When you got something like this, which first of all, it's about Anne Hathaway, you know, as a recovering alcoholic with a sympathetic connection to a kaiju. Like, what are you talking about?
And Jason Sudeikis playing against role in the second half of that film. You can't really box into a genre either, right? This is the sort of project that studios don't make. And if they make, they don't bring to theaters.
And I mean, there's so many twists and turns in that movie. Like you think it's going in one direction and then they start going and then you're like, what am I seeing? But in the end, it comes together so well. It's just, it's a wonderful movie. It was Neon's very first release. And I think it didn't get the sort of theatrical push that it would have. I mean, if Neon were to release that movie today, it would be a totally different story. But you know, you still see it all the time in the greatest sci-fi movies you've never heard of sort of, you know, list. And so anyway, so that was the very first one that we got involved with. And we got involved in a very small way. And, you know, like we had very limited sort of risk and reward on that financially. For us, we're like, this is an opportunity to work with people like Tim League that we really want to work with and to support films that we want to see. And, you know, the director Nacho Vigalondo is, you know, we think is a real talent and all that sort of stuff. So we did that. We were part of Mandy, the Nicolas Cage SpectreVision.
Of course, another beloved movie here in the let's see something that a studio didn't put out set that got a great, yes, great, great reception from folks when it came out. Another movie, hard to market. I can't really imagine that going through a studio pipeline. Yeah. Thank God that hit theaters.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that one was a really wild ride because again, it's such a unique movie. It's such a dark movie and it's a niche movie. I mean, it's turned into a real cult classic. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, there's arguably more theatrical potential for that film today than when it first came out, just by virtue of the community that it's built and the reputation that it's built over the years. But so we worked with Dean Devlin on you know, a little known film, Bad Samaritan. We worked with Searchlight on the release of Tolkien, about the life of J.R.R. Tolkien. We worked directly with Kevin Smith on the Jay and Silent Bob reboot. And our connection with that one was primarily with the Jay and Silent Bob reboot roadshow that he did, which, again, talk about a fundamentally different release model. Like that's what really attracted us to that is, you know, this idea. And so it's funny when you talk about the second part of that equation, like, oh, what have you mm-hmm. learned? And, you know, It's really hard because things have fundamentally changed so dramatically over the past 8 years. I mean, it's just, I think box office today is fundamentally different than it was 8 years ago. I mean, it's fundamentally different than it was two years ago. And I think hopefully, you know, it's funny. I feel like we're kind of in a best of times, worst of times sort of situation, because on one hand, theatrical is reeling. I mean, especially this first quarter of 2024, which is hitting them, I think, as hard as kind of like the pandemic. And, you know, as a result of the strikes and the whole pipeline dried up, and they're just really struggling to get people back in theaters. But on the flip side of it, you look at these phenomena like Barbenheimer and Taylor Swift and Sound of Freedom with Angel Studios, which is another equity company that uses equity crowdfunding. And, you know, there are these points that are like, holy cow. Like on one half, you get people that are saying, oh, theatrical is dead. And, you know, people are just going to watch in their living room. And then you've got these counterpoints, which is, no, people are willing to come out and they'll pack theaters. And I think, you know, to me, there is this duality. It's like, if you're going to go see a movie in a theater today, you are making a conscious decision to get up off of your couch and not watch the 10 movies that you have on your watch list that you can watch for free. And instead, you're going to put on pants, you're going to go out of the house, you're going to pay money to see it. So, you know, it's got to be something special. There's got to be a reason that's driving you to do that, whether it's because this is a movie that I need to see in the theater because it's Dune 2 and I'm like, I got to see that in the theater, or because it's a, you know, it's a Barbenheimer, it's part of the zeitgeist, like I need to see this because everybody's talking about it. Or, and I think this is where Legion M is really interested in playing in, because this is the movie my friends are going to see. And thinking
that, like, social aspect.
It is. Like, that's what drives it. When I was a kid, I went to the movie every Friday nights. And part of that was, that's where movie lived when I was a kid. But it was really more, if you think about it, because that's what me and my friends did on Friday nights. I wasn't going to these movies alone. That was the matrix in which our friendship existed. And I think that all of those reasons are still just as valid today. And that's why you see Taylor Swift breaking out. And that's why you see all of these amazing theatrical successes. And I also think, especially after the pandemic, the same way that people who lived through the Great Depression often hoarded things, right? They knew what it was like to go without. And so they would stockpile food and they were very loath to throw things away. I think that for all of us that suffered through the isolation of the pandemic and being forced to stay at home. And, you know, we had this forced experiment where we all got to watch first run movies on our couch. And I think that people today value social experience more than they ever have before, you know, and that's the thing. It's like the media is all around us. It's everywhere we look. I can watch a movie right now on my cell phone while I'm talking to you, but it's again, that connection with other human beings and that ability to be part of something that's big and exciting. That's where I think the magic lies. And that's what theatrical is all about. So what I'm hoping is that once we get through this kind of strike-induced dry period and the industry kind of adjusts to everything, I think we could be entering what is hopefully a little bit of a golden age, you know, for cinema again. So
I think that's what we're all hoping. And I think the industry is primed for it. And you're coming in at the right time, I think. Now, starting tomorrow, you are distributing William Shatner, You Can Call Me Bill, to theaters. Can you tell me a little bit about the project and why this became the first film you guys decided to throw your hat into the theatrical distribution ring on?
Yeah, so I mean, this is the first in a lot of reasons, and I mentioned with Colossal, we made a very small investment in somebody else's film, and all of the projects that I mentioned, the more than a dozen movies that we've been involved with up until probably say like a year ago, those were other people's projects that we were attaching to. This is the first one that Legion M owns outright, and we fully funded this movie, we went out to our community and said, hey, we've got an opportunity to work with William Shatner to do a documentary about his life. Bill is, I'm going to call him Bill. And
that isn't the title. I guess you're allowed to after you title your film that. Sure.
That is what he goes by. And this, if you've watched this film, you have the permission to call him Bill. But he's one of those guys that totally understood what Legion M was about the moment he heard it. We actually approached him at a Comic-Con. He was sitting in the green room eating a salad. And, you know, it wasn't me. It was David Baxter and Paul Scanlon. They approached him. They're like, Mr. Shatner, can we have your ear for a moment?
And you did a salad approach. That's always tough, man. In the middle of a meal.
I mean, like, it's
under 50-50 if you're going to get a response on those, Jeff. Well, congratulations.
Yeah. So it's at the green room in Comic-Con, and my colleague David Baxter is a world-class cosplayer. And so he's a 6'9" and he was dressed as Indiana Jones. So what are the odds when you approach William Shatner as, you know, while he's eating his lunch in the green room, and you're dressed in as Indiana Jones? Like, I don't think the odds of that conversation going well are high, but it worked. And it was because when we told him what Legion M is all about and this idea of a fan-owned studio, he said, oh my God, that's brilliant. And, you know, I mean, he's a person, his career, like most actors get Legion M because they understand the audience is where the power is in the industry. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, fundamentally, if you look at it, it's the wallets and eyeballs of all of us, of you and me and all of us that make this entire crazy industry go round. And so, you know, fundamentally, Legion M is about uniting and aggregating that power, you know, it's somewhat, you know, for change, because we want to see the movies that we want to see, but also so we can participate in it. So we can change our relationship from a consumer to, you know, someone who is part of the industry and benefiting from, you know, the power that we're providing. And so anyway, to get back to it, bottom line is we went out to our community. We actually sold out this offering and fully funded the movie in 4 days. And before Bill even got a chance to tweet it, like we have this whole like stage to plan. Okay, first we're going to announce it to the Legion M community, and then we're going to announce it publicly on the platform, and then we're going to have Bill tweet it. And we literally sold it out in stage one, which was just the Legion M community. But one of the artifacts of that is that this was the first film that we completely control the distribution rights to. And so we talked to a lot of people. We had various, you know, offers. We premiered at South by Southwest last year. And, you know, ultimately we decided that this was the way to go. So we hired an amazing team of theater bookers. We're working with Falling Forward Films, which is Scott Kennedy and Bryce Campbell, you know, who've been in booking theaters for decades. We are working with Film Frog, which is an amazing theatrical marketing firm that focuses on marketing, you know, through theaters, which I think is probably one of the most powerful ways. Like, I can go out and try and find William Shatner fans, but the idea of partnering with the theater to market through them, right, where we're providing money to the theater so that they can go out to their community of people that come to their theater and say, hey, we've got this opportunity. Anyway, so we've pulled together this crack team. And one of the things that we really like about it is it allows us to do things that are just different. One of the challenges that we have on all these other films, when I said, like, when we're the kid in the back seat, is we have no control over the theater map, right? Because the distributor is choosing that. A lot of times we literally don't even get the list of theaters until the week before the movie releases, because that's the way that the industry normally works for independent films. Like, I mean, that's just kind of how it goes. And that makes it really challenging for us. But in this case, we had theaters that announced showtimes 4 or 5 weeks ago. We started selling tickets. We started pre-selling tickets. We created these amazing limited edition pins of William Shatner. And we started, you know, pre-selling tickets 6 weeks ago. So,
well, I want to ask you a little bit more on that before we lose sight of that, because it's a great platform that you guys have on your website for pre-sales, where you're activating not only that Legion M community that you know you're very close to, but the public at large, to ask theaters to book this locally and go ahead and pre-buy tickets. Can you walk us through that concept of the pre-sales that you guys have launched really organically through your website?
100%. I mean, there's a chicken and egg problem when it comes to booking theatrically. Again, we're talking about the independent film world here, right? Obviously, if you're a Marvel movie, like getting theaters is not a problem. But for a film like this, and I mean, this is, let's be honest, this is a documentary in 2024. Like most documentaries don't even get a theatrical release. We feel like there is a community for this one. And we feel like, you know, William Shatner is William Shatner. He's 93 years old. He's an icon. We've got our Legion M community. But what we endeavored to do was to go out to people and say, hey, if you're willing to commit right now to pre-buying a ticket, understanding that we don't even know what theater it's going to be in, and there's a chance it might not even get to your theater. But if you're willing to do that, we're going to throw in one of these amazing pins that we had created. And then we are going to use the fact that you have already bought a ticket in this area, and we're going to combine it with everybody else that's, you know, bought tickets in this area. We're going to use that information to go try and book a theater in this area. And everything is backed by a 100% money back guarantee. So if we don't book a theater in your area, or if your plans change, or if it's not a theater you like, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you change your mind for any reason at any time, you can get a full refund of your money. Or, you know, we'll also offer, maybe we can apply the money that you wanted to spend on the theater ticket to the price of a DVD or a VOD purchase or something like that. That's really the offer. And we tell people, if you want this movie to come to a theater near you, the best thing that you can do is go round up five or six friends. And if you can all buy tickets, because fundamentally for us, like I think what a lot of people maybe don't understand is that for a theater to book a film, there's like two things that have to happen. A, it's got to make sense for the theater, right? They've got limited inventory and they're not going to book a theater if they don't think they're going to sell tickets, because, I mean, that's just shooting themselves in the foot.
So, and you're competing against every single major Hollywood studio for that one screen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're coming out against Ghostbusters, right? And I mean, that's not by choice. Like, we actually chose that day and then they came to us. We're just trying to turn it into like Ghost and Shatner, right? Or, you know, Bill Buster, or like, you know, whatever it is. But so we need to convince the theaters that there's demand. And on the flip side, you know, we need to know that there's demand, because there's a cost for us as the distributor to put it into a theater, because we're going to need to pay the cost of delivering it. And we got to get posters to the theaters, and we're going to want to do some marketing in that area and all that sort of stuff. And so what our hope was that by starting this process 6 weeks ago, we could start to develop a map of where the hot spots were, where there was real demand for it. So yeah, we've been really thrilled with it. And this is kind of the first chance that we've had to do something like this. And it's something that we want to do more of, and with all of the films that we are involved with theatrically. And so because of the fact that we own the rights to this film and we control the distribution and the theater map and all that sort of stuff, like, we just have levers and controls that we have that make it possible where it's never been possible before.
Well, I'm looking forward to see how audiences embrace this film, because I have to say, critics have already embraced it. If you go to RottenTomatoes.com, the critics score a perfect 100% out of 10 reviews so far as we record this episode. It's got to be exciting to have this open up and have audiences, paying audiences, get to experience this film.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, like, that's what's most exciting. And like I said at the beginning, it's for us as a company that's owned by a community, theater is where we can come together. Like, we want these theatrical releases to be like, this is where we go to church, you know, so to speak, where you get together with people that you like, and people that are interested in the same things as you. And long term, the sort of things that Legion M wants to do is to figure out ways that we can really enhance that and bring and add the social experience, right? Like, going to a theater can mean, on one end of the spectrum, going into a dark room with a bunch of strangers and watching a movie together, right? But it can also mean, you know, like what you see when you go to a great film festival, or when you go to an Alamo Draft House, right? Where there is community. So we want to do things like like live trivia, and not like kind of, you know, trivia where it's like, hey, we're going to flash up a question and then we're going to flash up an answer, but live trivia, like where you go to bars to play live trivia. Like why can't we flash up the questions and you and everybody in the theater or your team of people are trying to come up with the answer and submit it on your cell phone because there's going to be prizes and awards that are, you know, being given out. And we want to do things like drinks and specialty cocktails and reasons for people to come together before and after the movie. Like a lot of the things that we like to do for people that go to meetups for Legion M Films is even just like messages from the director that we can text you and give you some talking points so that, you know, like almost like a book club so that you and people, I mean, movies just mean so much more when you can engage with them in ways like these. And so these are the sorts of things that Legion M wants to do more of going forward.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing these innovations coming up in the coming months and years. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us here on the Box Office Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And that was Jeff Annison, the co-founder of Legion M. You can find their new documentary out in theaters this weekend, You Can Call Me Bill. A huge thank you to Jeff for stopping by here on the Box Office Podcast. And a huge thank you to you, our listener, for supporting us once again. This podcast is going to be back next Thursday with another new episode. Don't forget to rate and subscribe. The Box Office Podcast is produced by Box Office Pro in collaboration with Record Edit Podcast and The Box Office Company. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll talk to you again next week.